You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
Judging by your background, I'm going to say, let's say going to the Hamptons every summer is something that you did. It's something special that you did with your parents, and you want to keep going with the kids. Well, if you sell that home and you invest the net proceeds from the sale of that home, and you take just 25% of what it costs annually to carry that home, and you use that to rent a place for 2 weeks, look at the difference in how much longer your money lasts. And maybe you find out that it's not the home per se, but it's the ability to go to that same destination, that same time every year, and just explore different ways to accomplish the same goal.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're discussing affluence in adversity, the financial intricacies at the crossroads of high conflict and high net worth divorce. So navigating high conflict, high net worth divorce is exceptionally challenging, blending intricate financial issues with the intense emotional tensions that you feel. And the stakes are high with substantial assets at play, demanding all the more informed and strategic planning to ensure your financial stability after divorce. And so today's expert is a CDFA, a certified divorce financial analyst, can be one of your greatest allies, offering insights to bridge the gap between the divorce's financial and legal complexities. CDFAs do more than just crunch numbers. They provide an analysis aimed at long-term sustainability, guiding you through the economic implications of your settlement. And as you gear up to negotiate, I want you to remember the importance of a clear-headed, informed strategy. Understanding the real value of your assets, including liquidity and tax implications, all of which we'll be touching on today, is crucial. And by making decisions informed by, get this, logic rather than emotion, which is hard at times, you're better positioned for a future that's both financially secure and emotionally fulfilling. So before we dive in, with me today is Patrick Hilbane of Ullman Wealth Partners, located in Jacksonville, Florida. He brings both a wealth of family law experience, which is really interesting, along with his certified divorce financial analyst designation to this conversation. Pat serves as a wealth advisor with over a decade of experience helping clients coordinate their wealth management plans. And he's also the director of Ullman's Divorce Advisory Group, where he assists, guides, and supports clients before, during, and after their divorce, with a special focus on helping high net worth clients make wise financial decisions throughout the divorce process. So we have so much to talk about. Let's just dive right in. Welcome, Pat.
Karen, thank you so much. Thank you for having the courage to talk about these issues. You do a great service, and I'm honored to be a guest on your show today.
Well, we have so much to talk about that is so not my wheelhouse. And my experience with my clients is whether they have a whole lot of assets or not very many at all, there's such financial fear. So we're talking specifically to our clients who they fall into that affluent, that wealthy category. And so it gets very complicated. It gets very overwhelming. And in high conflict, often one spouse is not as privy, aware, or has as much access. And so I think there's so much that we can bring to the table to inform our listeners.
Absolutely. I'm happy to educate and inform. So, you know, let's go.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I really like talking about are those very, very, very early stages. And so a client has decided that they need to get a divorce, but there's a lot of fear because it's high conflict. So my first question to you around finances is how does somebody in that position ensure that they don't get locked out of all of these marital assets as punishment or consequence for making this decision? What are some of the questions they can ask their attorney or steps that they can take before they go and tell their spouse they want a divorce so that they actually finding themselves between a rock and a hard place?
Karen, that's a great question. And I always like to say that before a case is filed, the court or mediators or attorneys, they don't know that there's a problem at home. You know, until the government gets involved in trying to dissolve this partnership, there are no rules. So if there is a joint bank account, theoretically, both spouses have the same access to that money. Now, if John and Jane are going to get a divorce and Jane all of a sudden moves half of the money into a separate account, that's going to raise all sorts of red flags and start ringing all sorts of alarms, even though Jane has the same access to John. And on the other hand, if John took half the money, Jane would also be alarmed. So the first thing that I tell people who are considering this is go meet with a lawyer. Pay for a consultation in cash. You may not be in a position where you want to move forward, but you're considering, you should know your rights. Because in a lot of jurisdictions, when you file for a divorce, like in Florida, for example, where I'm at, there is an administrative order basically that says, okay, you've paid your money, you filed your case, you've asked for the government to get involved in your life. Here is an administrative order that we enter automatically in every single brand new divorce case that's filed that says, here's how the finances are going to be governed while the case is going to be pending. The good news in high net worth cases is, let's just say a husband wants to impose economic sanctions on the wife and cut her off from the money. In high net worth cases, a lot of times it's the same lawyers dealing with one another, and maybe the person who cut the other person off doesn't know that they can't do that. But there are some fairly quick remedies for the person who's been cut off to go and ask the court for the same access to money or require the spouse who cut them off to pay them a sufficient amount of money on a temporary basis until the case is ultimately resolved.
Okay, so you have to have enough money to at least retain the attorney is what I'm hearing. So if you have access to assets and nobody wants to give advice to just go and grab half of them, and yet if your experience, and I've had a number of clients who part of the abuse was financial abuse, the entire marriage. So if that what's about to happen, it sounds like at least getting enough funds so that you can meet with, retain an attorney, and then go and get whatever those court orders are early on so that you can take care of yourself, maybe the kids, the household, as well as the divorce expenses.
And Karen, so many attorneys understand the predicament that person is in, and they will work with them. We're not talking about floating and financing somebody's litigation for a couple of years. I mean, maybe 60 or 90 days. And like I said, in these high conflict cases, if I was representing somebody that did that to the opposing spouse, I would tell my client, listen, the judge is not going to look favorably upon that. You can't cut them off. That's not how it goes. And should my client want to persist and take that approach, then I would have told them that this isn't a right fit and you need to go find another lawyer. And you would hope that other lawyers in that circumstance would be the leader in their case and not have one person treating their estranged spouse in that manner.
Right. And I'm going to try not to step on the slippery slope of talking about all the legal stuff. We do have an episode with an attorney covering the same stuff. So let's say you've managed to access the finances and begin to move forward. I want you to talk just broad stroke here about the value of a CDFA, especially in high net. And I think it would be very helpful to talk about the difference between, I know there are financial planners, there are financial advisors, there are obviously CPAs. So there's all these different financial professionals, and then some of them have a CDFA attached. So can you just explain to our audience what the difference is and what the value is?
Sure. The CDFA, it's a special designation for financial advisors where somebody takes a deep dive, and they're not an attorney, but they really familiarize themselves with the special financial issues that a divorce situation presents a financial advisor to help the client make informed decisions on the equitable distribution, on the different tax treatments per se for different assets, helping them make decisions on whether to keep a house, whether to sell it, what about the capital gains treatment on that house, capital gains exclusions for if you're married or whether you're going to sell that house as a single person. So what I like to say in a nutshell, if somebody like you comes to me and says, why should I bring a CDFA in my case? I always say, I help translate what the settlement agreement means to you in a real life month-to-month basis. What does that mean for your life? How does the settlement allow you to run the life that you want to run and live?
You know, there's very few things as a coach that we tell our clients, but one of the things that's always been a tell for me is, regardless of how much money you have, and certainly if you have significant assets, your attorney is schooled in the law and negotiation. They are not financial experts, first and foremost. And yet, when we put aside the shared parenting and decision-making, everything is money. And so in high net, it's everything is a lot of money. And the more money, the more complexities. And so I think what I hear you saying, Pat, is there's a difference between hiring a financial expert under various categories and hiring someone who has gotten that designation of a CDFA, because there are different, can you kind of nail it for us, bottom line it for us? Are there different analyses that are done? Are there different skills that you develop as a CDFA? What exactly is that?
Yeah, like I said, the CDFA training and the continuing education is all about the intricate financial issues that a divorce presents, projections, future, whereas the CPA is dealing with the tax consequences of various actions that may happen in the immediate future or have already happened. A forensic accountant has specific education and training to trace assets and find assets that had been moved around and dissipated.
What about you? Let's say if you didn't have a CDFA, like you're a wealth advisor, you swim in the waters of money, you understand large assets, you understand the complications of them. What is the difference between one of my listeners going, I have a wealth advisor, I don't need a CDFA, and someone who goes, I have a wealth advisor who's not a CDFA, so I'm going to get a CDFA. What is that difference?
Sure. The difference between a general practitioner versus somebody with a commitment to a specific discipline, where a wealth advisor says, look, I really want to focus on the divorce circumstances. I understand that divorce laws and the issues that divorces present are fluid. They're changing. They're different. In Florida, last legislative session, we passed a alimony overhaul reform, and hopefully with the continuing education, the CDFA is up to date and up to speed on all of these different dynamic issues. I think a wealth advisor without the CDFA can be very serviceable, but I think the CDFA brings a commitment and an education and a willingness to be up to speed on the various intricate issues and can spot them right away. And maybe a wealth advisor who isn't as intimately familiar with these issues may miss something.
Right. And folks, I always recommend that if you're going to hire an attorney and you're going through a divorce, it has to be a matrimonial attorney. It cannot be a generalist for the exact same reasons that Pat just described the value of a CDFA. When you're going into negotiations about everything that impacts the rest of your life, you want to have the expert. So I really appreciate that explanation.
Yeah. And Karen, I'll take it even one step further. I think for myself, with having more than a decade of actually litigating family cases, I know the law and the procedure. And I know how these issues, like, for example, I just worked on one case and there was a highly compensated executive involved in the case. And there were these different retirement plans, non-qualified plans for the highly compensated executives. The lawyers, if they don't get the summary plan description, they don't know all the intricacies involved in dividing up those plans. And some of them, if they're not ERISA plans, they're not subject to division with a qualified domestic relations order. And I told the person that I'm working with, look, if there's one thing that's going to trip up your mediation and prevent it from being done, it's the lawyers are not going to know how to treat this. So these are the questions that you have to ask the lawyers. These are the documents that you need to get so everybody knows what we're dealing with and how to divide that. So that's not giving any legal advice. That's just saying we need to understand what the asset is, how we divide it, how the taxes are going to be imposed on this, and how we compare apples to apples when we're doing the equitable distribution. So those are some of the special skills that I think I bring to these situations.
Yeah. And folks, what Pat is talking about is, it's referred to as a quadro. And I actually had a quadro expert on once who just shared like five nightmare stories and said that the best of attorneys, because there's so many rules and regulations on so many different levels, that it could really go south. She told me stories about the loss of tens, hundreds, and millions of dollars. I'm going to put that podcast episode in the show notes for you guys listening. So if you've got quadro as part of your scenario, definitely go and listen to that. It's going to be really valuable. And that was a great example, Pat. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
Let's go to forecasting. I think that when I first learned about what forecasting was, I thought, well, this is fascinating. This is really valuable for people. And so can you describe what that practice is and what the software is or what it does when someone comes to you and you have a picture of their financial situation and you forecast for them based on possible settlements?
Sure. So what I like to do, and this is why it's so important to work in tandem with the lawyer, because the lawyer should have a pretty reasonable idea of what the outcome of the case should be within a certain range. So I'd like to say, so Karen, assume you're the lawyer that I'm working with. I'd like to say, all right, Karen, in the Jones case, tell me where you think this case is going to settle. What are the assets going to be? What is the alimony amount that you think is going to be reasonable? What are the liabilities? So on and so, okay. And then I go to my client and I say, all right, so, you know, assume you're 55 years old and your life expectancy may be 84, but we're going to plan you out to live to 92. Okay. I'm going to look at how much is a reasonable amount for my client to live the life that she wants to live. And we're going to say, okay, if we invest your assets in this way, if you live in this home, you have, let's just use round numbers, $10,000 a month to live your life, growing with inflation. And that assumes that you're going to take your Social Security or one half of your former spouse's Social Security at your full retirement age. And that's our plan. And then if you're my lawyer, I'm going to say, okay, in the Johnson case, what's a best case scenario? And where's a settlement where you would say, okay, we'll settle the case here, but we're not going to go any less. So we have three different scenarios, a best, kind of a middle of the road, and a worst case before we decide to let the judge figure this out. And then compare those. So my client has an idea. Okay, if the settlement is anywhere within this range, this is how much money I'm going to be able to spend on a monthly basis. And we're going to give you a raise annually for inflation. Social Security is going to be included in there. So if there are unexpected amounts and you continue to ask me to send you an amount excess over, you know, what we talked about, you may run out of money. And we don't want that. And certainly if there are some other big ticket items, like we want to contribute to college, or we want to pay for a wedding, or contribute to pay for a wedding, or buy somebody a car, or if I'm going to need a new roof on my house, we factor all of those different things in. So rates of return on investments are not linear, meaning we don't get the same amount every year. But by looking back, I can tell you what that asset mix has historically done on average. So in the good years, you can't take more. And in the bad years, we don't want you taking any less, but we've got to be consistent to make sure that you don't run out of money. I tell everybody, I have one job. It's to make sure, Karen, that your money outlives you.
Right. Beautiful.
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit SoberLink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
Let's take a step back, just in case anyone listening doesn't understand the mechanics of getting to that conversation. So can you just share quickly, it may have different names in different states, but the net worth statement, that documentation of what you have, what you owe, what you earn, what you need. Can you just describe what's involved in that document, because and how important it is as a linchpin to the negotiation?
I think the document in Florida, we call it a financial affidavit, where there's four parts where you list all of your monthly income, your monthly expenses, your assets, and your liabilities. It's essential. I tell my clients that's the most important document in your entire case. And your number one job is to do your best to try and figure out as best as you possibly can how much money it takes to run your life on a monthly basis. If you want my number one task for a woman going through a divorce, figure out how much money it costs to run your life. How do you do that? Let's look at all of your spending sources, checks that you write, cash that you take out of your account, expenses that are auto debited from your bank account every month, like a mortgage or insurance premiums. What about Venmo and Zelle and all of these other new spending. So write down all of the ways that you could possibly spend money on a monthly basis. And then go on each one of those spending sources, go back 24 months and get an idea of how much money is coming out, is leaving your household on a monthly basis. Right. And when you're at the beginning of a divorce case, you may not be able to have put your fingertips on all of that information, right? Right. So in Florida, you have the ability to amend your, like you called it, a net worth statement when more information becomes available. So when I was practicing, if I represented somebody who didn't have access to all the information, we wrote preliminary net worth statement on it with a footnote that says, hey, we don't have all the information. We're going to amend this when we get it because I don't want somebody to come after my client and say, well, wait a minute, you told me you only spend $10,000 a month, but then you amended this net worth statement and you're telling me you spend 50. Well, yeah, I only said I spent 10 because I didn't have all the information.
Yeah. And I think that happens, certainly with my client base, that happens more often than not, that whoever is the lesser moneyed or non-moneyed spouse may not have access to everything. And so right. If you're starting off in divorce and you're tuning in today, it is one of the most important documents for you to get your hands on, to get some assistance with, to fill in as much as you can, because everyone's really negotiating off of that document. And my clients have found it really informative. Even my clients who are the money spouse, when they sit down, because I think we all know what we make, and then all of a sudden it's gone. It's like, well, where did it go? And with emerging adults and Zelle and Venmo, all of a sudden it's very fast to send money. And so where does it all go? So I love really highlighting the value and importance of that net worth statement.
Yeah. And again, you get that document and your lawyer asks you to fill it out and it can be so overwhelming.
Yes.
But what I tell everybody is there's only one way to eat an elephant. It's one bite at a time. So break it down into the various sections. And from the client standpoint, I argue the most important section is the expenses section. The assets, a lot of those are readily ascertainable how much they're worth. You just have to look at a statement, a bank statement, a brokerage account statement, and you see the value. Some of the assets, like a house or a business, you may have to bring an expert in to help you ascertain the value, but it's okay to list the asset and say that the value is unknown. And eventually, through the discovery process, when the divorce is ongoing, you'll get that information.
Yep. Perfect. So you just made me think of something, but I'm going to hold off for a second. Let's talk for a minute about apples and oranges. So someone listening has three large assets, and they're seemingly about the same value. And one is a house, and one is an investment, and one is a hedge fund or whatever. But they're not, because other things come into play. So can you share a little bit about some of the things that come into play when you might see similar numbers on different assets, but they don't necessarily mean they're of equal value?
Sure. Okay, so let's say in a case we have a brokerage account, an investment account that is worth $500,000. And then we have an IRA, one of the spouses rolled over from a 401k when they left the job, also $500,000. And you look at the investments in those accounts and they're very similar. And one party says, hey, I'm going to take the brokerage account and why don't you take the retirement account? Well, the brokerage account was funded with money that has already been taxed. So you can take it out of that brokerage account at any time without any penalty. And the only tax that you're going to pay on that account is the tax on the growth of the investments. Okay. You'll pay tax on the dividends from the stocks that pay dividends and the interest on any bonds that it would hold. Now, on the retirement account, again, similar investments that IRA may hold, but you can't access that money without penalty before age 59 and a half without a 10% penalty. And then that money was got in that account with money that hasn't been taxed yet. So when you take it out, you have to pay what's called ordinary income tax on that money. And that's the same tax rate that your wages and your bonus income is taxed at. And the brokerage account is taxed at capital gains rate, which in not all cases, but is normally a lower rate than what the ordinary income rate is. So yes, that's a very easy example, but you have to take into consideration what the asset is, how it was funded, how money is taxed when it's taken out of the account.
So folks, I want to tell you a little story. I was recently speaking to a potentially new client who wanted to tell her husband that she was ready to file for divorce. And she just knew that he was immediately going to go into the detailed conversation of who gets the house and how do we split the money and everything. And in that conversation, she was literally having this conversation with me, how I looked at things. And so I think it's fair if he takes this and I take this and that. And by the end of the conversation, she completely understood why that would not be a good idea for many different reasons. But that whole concept of she was looking at numbers and she said, okay, we've got enough for everybody. Fair enough. But then she was like ready to jump in and negotiate on something that she really didn't understand all of the intricacies of. And that's the thing we really want people to avoid, because there are so many stories out there of folks walking away thinking that they've gotten a good settlement only to find out that they've got quite the short end of the stick.
So Karen, one more example, and I don't want to go too deep in this, but let's say that husband has a brokerage account and wife has a brokerage account. Okay. Even within the accounts, they may hold different assets. And let's say the wife had a successful career before the marriage and amassed $250,000 in that account. And then they stopped contributing it. And then they opened a joint account. And for ease of discussion, let's just say both accounts are marital, right? Each one has $250,000. But since the wife funded her account before, the assets in the wife's brokerage account may have a much lower cost basis. Therefore, they may more likely subject to more capital gains tax than the other brokerage accounts. So even within the same asset level, you've got to do an analysis on the holdings in those investment accounts to make sure, where it may be easier just to say, hey, you take your brokerage account that you had before we got married, I'll take the joint brokerage account. Well, she just got stuck with assets that have a much lower cost basis.
Yeah. And it's funny, I thought you were actually going to go into a conversation about premarital assets, which is yet another complication that needs to be taken into consideration.
We could spend all week together talking about
this. Yeah, we're not going to do it. But I'm trying to hold my own in this conversation, Pat.
You're doing great.
So I want to talk for a moment about, before we get into the negotiating, which brings us to financial and emotional and how those play off of each other. There's a wide variety of experts that may be needed in affluent situations, right? You said something, if we could talk and just kind of top level, we don't have to go too deep on these, but okay. So if you have real estate, right, whether it's residential or commercial properties, you need an expert for that, don't you?
Well, unless you disagree, or unless you agree on the value. If husband and wife own a commercial property and they both agree that it's worth $1.5 million, there's no need to get an expert. You need an expert when one person says this commercial property is worth $800 and the other one says it's $1.5 million. And oh, by the way, the person who thinks it's worth $800 wants to keep it.
Right. I think we are talking about high conflict divorce here though, Pat. This is the scenarios we often find ourselves in. So if you have real estate, you're looking at an appraiser who's going to give you, and I did a whole series on this where this appraiser was explaining the difference between a commercial appraiser and a residential appraiser, and that they're actually very different processes. Is there anything else on that appraisal expert that you would want to touch on?
I had, during the financial crisis in 07 or 08, dealt with a lot of homes and homes that were in foreclosure. And I had a family judge tell me that he thought a market analysis from a realtor was better evidence than an appraisal. And a lot of the realtors, what they do is, because they want the business, they'll do a market analysis and won't charge for it. And they'll say, this is what I think this house would sell for within 30 days or 60 days or something like that. I don't know of a similar service on the commercial side, but for people who don't want to necessarily spend a lot of money, if they have a realtor that they trust and the value of their home is in question, maybe a market analysis is a different, more efficient way. And some may even argue better evidence as to what the fair market value of that particular house is. With appraisers, Karen, you and I know that we can get an appraisal report and we can look at the different comps that they use and differentiate this house from that house and so on and so forth. But for a realtor who really knows that specific street or neighborhood, or maybe a market analysis, maybe a different expert to consider when a real estate.
I've actually encouraged clients who weren't quite ready to hire the appraiser to have a realtor. I used to sell real estate, and so I used to do those market analysis. And it's true, you're going off of multiple listing, you're putting together the facts, the numbers of the numbers, are there upgrades and what have you. If you're unsure of the value of your house, but you're not quite ready to hire an appraiser that could be used in court, calling a well-established realtor and asking them for a market analysis is a great suggestion. So then there's business valuations and forensics, and I know they can be the same and they can be different. Can you just give a couple of sentences on each of those financial experts?
Sure. A business valuator is when husband and wife, they started a business during the marriage, or they had one and it's gone in value and they disagree on what the value is. So the business valuator is essentially a business appraiser, and they're going to do projections on what the market is for that business, what they think sales or revenues are going to be. And there's different, not to get too deep, but there's different methodologies that are used in valuing businesses. So people can't agree. They each get a business appraiser. They each come up with a report and they have different numbers, and they try to use those reports to try to come up with a common value, where they let the judge pick the value. And then forensic accounting, we see the need for a forensic accountant a lot of times where somebody is not an employee, but they own a business, and you're trying to back into what the business owner's compensation is, because they may have a lot of personal expenses that are paid for the business, or money may be retained by the business and not distributed to the partner or owner for different reasons. And a forensic accountant a lot of times is used to really try and establish for the court what somebody's available income is to pay alimony and or child support. Is that helpful?
Yeah. I think that if you're afraid that your spouse is having an affair, that they've got offshore accounts, that they're hiding or spending, or they have a gambling issue, like any of these things where you fear that what you see is not the whole picture, that's my understanding of when a forensic can come in and do that deep dive to evaluate what's going on.
And that's correct. And I don't want to be naive and say that doesn't happen anymore. But I will say, with the proliferation of our financial transactions being done electronically, it's a whole lot easier to trace money than it used to be. Now, what I'm interested in, and I haven't really seen this yet, is when money goes into Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin and all these other cryptocurrencies that you can't necessarily trace, how that's going to impact what we do. And I think there's a market for somebody who can get up to speed quickly and try and figure out how to trace. But that's the thing with the cryptocurrencies, right? They're supposed to be untraceable.
Yes. I think that's a whole world that is complex when it comes to divorce and tracking money. There's two more topics I'd love to cover with you before we wrap up, and then I'd like you to share how people can find you. So there, oftentimes, and maybe not so much in the real affluent, but oftentimes one's home is one of their largest investments, and even more often, it's the thing that holds the most emotional charge. And so can you just talk a little bit about I want to talk about finances and emotions and how to make decisions with your head and not your heart. And maybe we could use the marital home as even an example.
Yeah, great asset to use as an example. And not only emotions, but I want to provide stability for my children. This is the home that they've been in. If I move them out of this home, then that means that they have to move out of the school district as well, because maybe property values have appreciated so much that you'll never be able to get back in to this house. And nowadays, maybe you locked in an interest rate on a mortgage that it would be cost prohibitive for you to get another house of similar size or in a similar neighborhood, but maybe at double or even more than that on the interest rate. So what I always tell people is, Karen, it's your money. I'm never, ever going to tell you how or not to spend your own money. But what I will do is I'm going to show you the financial implications of whatever decision that you make. So you can decide if you want to keep the home instead of renting for a couple years at this amount. You're going to run out of money at age 68. Well, wait a minute. I thought you told me my life expectancy is 84. It is. And if you want to keep the home, then you just need to be prepared to be out of liquid assets at age 68, unless something else changes. Okay. So if you want to keep the home and then you want to struggle in your later years because that's your goal and that's priority, fine. That's okay. It's your life. But this is what the consequence is going to be of that decision. Okay. And if you can live with that, then go for it. But I want you to be informed. I'm not going to tell you that everything is going to be financially okay, because it's going to tax you. Or just say, look, if you make this decision, then you're going to be in a negative cash flow. And then you may have to go get a job in 24 months to supplement your cash flow, or you're going to be out of money at age 68.
Right. Or the individual who wants the marital home and one of the vacation homes, but it's going to push them over the edge. And so I've spoken to so many financial planners, and it's really hard when you're going from being really affluent to your spouse is going to continue. If you're the non or lesser moneyed spouse, your spouse is going to continue to make really good money. That's what they do. You're going to get a settlement and you're not going to continue to grow in that way. And so I think that one of the hardest things is golden handcuffs, right? You're in this high conflict marriage and part of you wants to stay because of the trips and the homes and the bells and the whistles and the comfortable financial lifestyle. And now you're negotiating and you have to decide. And it's really people like Pat who are just giving the hard facts of you have some really important choices to make, and sticking your head in the sand is not a good idea. And going off of a knee-jerk emotional reaction is not going to serve you well. And so looking at the numbers, and I often tell clients, just go out and shop for something different. Just go and see what's on the market, see what's out there. If you want to rent for a while, if you want to buy. But there's such an attachment that there often needs to be a way to disconnect the emotions from it so that the decision is being made in a financially wise manner.
Right. And if this is where it's important to really know your client and talk to them and understand what motivates them and what their goals are. So judging by your background, I'm going to say, let's say going to the Hamptons every summer is something that you did. It's something special that you did with your parents and you want to keep going with the kids. Well, if you sell that home and you invest the net proceeds from the sale at home and you take just 25% of what it costs annually to carry that home and you use that to rent a place for 2 weeks, look at the difference in how much longer your money lasts. And maybe you find out that it's not the home per se, but it's the ability to go to that same destination, that same time every year and just explore different ways to accomplish the same goal.
Love, love, love that example. That's perfect. That's perfect. So folks, there is a lot. There's a lot to understand. You're going through a high conflict divorce. Your head is already overwhelmed between fear and uncertainty. And then you have all of these numbers and all of these very big decisions to make. And so I just really want to encourage you to build a professional support team that honors your future and sets you up for success for the remainder of your life. And so, Pat, could you share how folks can find you before we wrap up and say goodbye?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And I'd love to help anybody listening who needs it. Easiest way to get in touch with me, our website is almanwealthpartners.com, and Alman has two L's and two N's. People always leave off one of the L's or one of the N's, but almanwealthpartners.com. My email and office phone number is on there. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I wrote a book. I'm so passionate about helping people in the space. I wrote a book for high net worth women going through divorce called Move Forward Confidently. And I don't make any money from the sale of the book. We donate the proceeds from the sale of the book to a domestic violence shelter in Northeast Florida. If you don't have time to read the book, it's available as a download on an audiobook. But I really encourage you to get a hold of the book, because you talked about the net worth statement. I've got exhibits. I have a glossary in the book for what these terms mean. So I really wrote the book for it to be like a workbook, like a resource. And I tried to pull back the curtain and demystify the divorce process and break it down for somebody who's brand new to this circumstance.
I just added it to our show notes. So you don't have to remember all of that. We have the spelling correct, and we've got a link to Amazon for the book. Highly, highly recommend you check out the book. If you're looking for a CDFA, what's the story, Pat, with you and jurisdictions? Can you support people around the world, coast to coast? Just last question before we say goodbye.
Yeah, I do. I'm currently helping. I'm involved in a divorce case in London as we speak. So I'm not familiar with divorce law in the United Kingdom. Obviously, I'm not barred there, but I've learned a lot. And I'm not in a position where I'm giving legal advice anymore. I'm just generally familiar with the laws so I can understand how they apply. But yes, a short answer to your question, I can help in multiple jurisdictions.
Beautiful. So if you like what you hear, reach out to Pat, have a conversation. And thank you so much for sharing your expertise and wisdom with us today, Pat.
Karen, it was a pleasure. And like I told you before we got going, the questions that you had for me were some of the most specific and some of my favorite ones that I've ever been asked, because I think they're really, really helpful for the people that are in the throes of a divorce. So thank you for the service that you're providing, for the help that you're helping great people who are facing, you know, one of the toughest things that they're ever going to have to face.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
We'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. You folks have a great day.
You too.
Have you lost yourself in your marriage, fallen into self-doubt, insecure and uncertain of your own viewpoints? If you've disappeared behind the shadow of your partner's personality, the Reclaim Your Mind free mini course will help you understand how you got here and the exact steps needed to regain control of your life. Go to jbddivorcesupport.com/reclaimyourmind and get started today. You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.